Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We're a nation that's obsessed with celebs, and the more private they are, the more we want to know. Every week in Fabulous Magazine, we talk to our most loved celebrities, whether it's about fashion, beauty, or more personal matters. Now we're going one step further with this series of intimate and tell-all conversations. This is the podcast where I get under the skin of what really makes a woman by meeting the most important lady in their life. Mums and daughters may not always be the best of friends, but in this show, our fabulous females are brave enough to let us into their personal lives and share the highs and lows of their relationships.
Surefire way to get you to stop, right? Did you vomit?
I think I vomited, but I didn't stop smoking.
Did you not?
I mean, there was music around the hall.
We always had music
so
playing.
There was music in the house,
the
there was
hotel.
Music in the hotel.
Yeah.
Broadcaster and writer Edith Bowman has been working in TV and radio for nearly 20 years. Her knowledge and passion for music and film, which stem from being a genuine fan, have seen her incorporate both extensively into all that she does. She has broadcast radio shows on BBC 1, 2, 5, 6, and in her homeland in Scotland. She was born and raised in a small fishing village just outside of Fife. Now, she's going to kill me for not mentioning the village, but I find it really hard to pronounce. I'm here to learn more about what shaped Edith into the powerhouse voice of radio that she is today.
And I still remember being sat at my desk at Radio 1 when she phoned to tell me that she had breast cancer. I was so blasé the way she told us as well. And that it was really early and it was going to be fine and stuff. And she did immediately just kind of make sure everybody else was okay.
I'm Lisa Snowden. This is Things I Told My Daughter. And here's what happened when I met Edith and Eleanor Bowman. So today I'm off to Kenwood House in Hampstead. This gorgeous Georgian gem sits on the edge of the famous Heath in North London, close to where Edith lives and spends a lot of time with her family. The lovely people at Kenwood House have very kindly offered us their beautiful and very atmospheric old kitchen as a cosy recording studio just for the afternoon. Welcome to the show, Edith and Eleanor Bowman.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you, if you were to describe one another to a stranger, what would you say? How would you say? How would you describe each other?
I'll go first.
Go on, Edith.
Eleanor is the person who everybody else comes before her. So she's the person that everybody goes to for advice or help. And she's the first person to offer that advice or help to people.
There we go.
Yeah.
To be honest, really loving and caring. A great family person, always puts her family first. I just think she's such a loving and giving, very, very generous with her family.
I think there's something about mum being in the middle. So mum's one of seven daughters.
That's a lot, isn't it?
All beginning with E. And mum's piggy in the middle. And I think it's a gravitational thing, almost.
That, yeah, kind
of. She's just got this amazing aura of she's there to help and she's there
love
to give.
And empathy,
yeah, all that. It's a kind of physical thing, I think.
And you've obviously got that too, though.
If I've got a 20th, 100th of that, then I'd be happy, to be honest. Totally.
But your pals come to you if they've got problems and...
I like to think or hope I'm a good listener. Mm. So I don't know whether that's something where sometimes when I'm doing interviews, because I like to do interviews in an environment that's really relaxed, where you can actually kind of have a chat with someone that they feel like they can offload. Sometimes I do that as a nervous thing as well.
Or overshare.
Yeah.
I'm so
terrible for that. I just talk to
because
kind of cover my nerves.
Because you just want to disarm them as well and you want to be like, I can...
Oh, and then. It's just like, shush, less is more.
But I guess it's good, obviously, I mean, in your line of work as well, in order to put the people at ease and then also to get them on different kind of subjects rather than the normal 5-6 minute chat of a press junket, which is just so boring for everybody, you know?
Totally. And I think I got a lot of that from mum and growing up in the hotel as well, in terms of being the public.
when we were kids growing up, my dad had an old-fashioned grocer shop and a cafe, like the Fonz, and been surrounded with people all my life.
All the time.
And I'm not good at one. I need people around me.
And all your sisters, I mean, that's like a massive family. Yeah. Like massive.
Five of them like live within 3 minutes walk now of each other.
That is so lovely.
It's hilarious. But we're not, you know, in each other's pockets. You know, we just know that we're there for each other if we need
just there, exactly. Yeah. Just for a cup of tea if you need to just pop in.
I mean, I always say that, you know, good friends, you don't have to speak to them every day. Mm-hmm. It's great that I need to go and give so-and-so a phone, and just pick up the phone and you just pick up for where you've left off.
I know, my best friend lives in America. I don't see her as often as I like, but as soon as I see her, it's like no time has passed.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Edith has such an amazing career, like her sort of genuine
busy girl
passion for music, the like that organic love for it. You know, seen her have the most incredible career in obviously radio and TV, and now you're podcasting. You must be so proud.
You bet, definitely. What are you
most proud of?
Just how she tackled it all on her own and came down here at a young age, something that I would never have been able to do. I wouldn't have had the guts to do it. She took a job that she thought would help to feed her until she got what she really wanted. Mm. And it all started with MTV when they were looking for regional accents.
So remember you coming
after
down.
After being told that they would never get on radio speaking like a fifer.
Is that what was said?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Tom Steele, who's the programme controller of what is now Fourth, Radio Fourth. And I kind of borderline stalked him to try and get to get work experience. And so I think it got to the point where he was like, Jesus, someone just get her in for 10 minutes so that she stops hounding me. So went in and he was horrible to me. And you know, one of those instances where you can feel tears building up in you, but you're like, I will not show weakness. Mm. Kind of like almost inhaling the tears. And he was like, well, you know, what do you see, you know, down the line sort of thing. And I was like, well, I'd eventually like to be on air and have my own show and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, I could never put someone with an accent like yours on the radio.
Oh my gosh.
But massive rejection. I kind of stuck to my guns though as well, in terms of even when I came down here and I started, I had a showreel that I'd got made from my last student loan that I used to make that, and I sent it to everyone. And I've still got the folder of rejection letters, and a lot of them say, maybe you should have elocution lessons. But I could have easily done that, but I didn't.
No,
because it's part of me. It's like, and it changes when she's around as well.
Does it get really strong accent?
Mum's a bit like that. It's when we went to New York.
What happened?
No, it's just that I have a habit of taking on people's accents, and it used to happen in the hotel.
My dad does that.
Really embarrassing. It's really embarrassing, and I don't mean to do it. I used to do it with Colin when I was speaking to Colin.
Suddenly
so if you're ordering at a restaurant, for example, is that when it would be like, would you be like, can I have some?
Can I have a coffee? I took Mum to New York for her 50th.
On the boat.
She didn't know where she was going until we got to the airport.
Yeah, just two of us. That's precious.
And we had a great time, didn't we? And one of the things Mum wanted to do was to go out to Ellis Island and do the tour. So I was like, right, I'll go and get the headphones with the tour stuff. There's a wee thing, go and get us a coffee sort of thing. So I was expecting it to be ages. Got these things really quick and then just kind of headed towards the little coffee shop place as Mum was ordering in her best and finest American accent.
Broad New York.
Can I have two coffees?
Amazing.
But that's the actress in her. See, this is something she won't talk about. She won't bring up herself, is that some of my earliest memories of Mum are of her performing. So one of my earliest memories is her playing Nancy in Oliver.
Oh, I love Nancy.
My dad's taken me to see that when I was 3 or 4.
Well, I was 21. Three.
So you sing as well. That's where he gets his voice from.
Yeah. And then there's sing songs in the bar, in the hotel.
Yeah. Christmas carols at Christmas we used to do. In the hotel, on a Saturday night, there'd be a dinner dance with this band that you'd be hilarious being a waitress. You'd be in the pantry and you'd go, you'd know the next song before they started playing it because they had
it's
one.
It's 10 past 10, they'd be playing.
Exactly, yeah. Sweet Caroline's on its way. Because they had one set of songs and that's all they played. But in their break at Christmas time, all the waitresses and wine waiters and stuff, and the kitchen staff, we'd all get woolly hats and scarves on. We'd come out and sing Christmas carols and go round and collect for charity. It's brilliant fun.
That's amazing. Is that something you wanted to do then when you were younger?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actress.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
And then my dad opened the hotel and I thought that was going to be more exciting.
So you combine the two, a little bit of performance after dark. And
yeah.
So I wanted to just go back to talking. I didn't realise that you'd had so many knockbacks coming. And like, where do you think you found that sort of that strength, that tenacity, that sort of that drive to keep going?
Well, they never stop, really. You know, the kind of the no's or you don't get the job. Mm. They never stop. And it's just about, and there's times where it gets really hard to...
But also you're quite hard on yourself, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
You beat yourself up.
Yeah, and it's hard not to take stuff personally. I think it was actually maybe easier back then than it is now, because knowing the things that I can do and then not getting the jobs, that's kind of almost harder, because you're like, well, I could easily do that. But I think when I was younger and kind of taking those knockbacks, I had no expectations. I grew up in an environment where I was kind of not taught, but in an environment where it was, if you work hard, you kind of reap the benefits. So that kind of work ethic was instilled in me from a really early age. And so I wasn't scared to work hard. So I guess maybe that sort of idea of someone saying no to you is kind of like, well, let me work a bit harder and I'll come back to you, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I got my training through MTV.
Yeah,
from
me too.
Kind of, yeah, from like...
Both started the MTV.
Yeah, from kind of coming in and, you know, I came in through doing the news bulletins and you had to write your own script. You went out and did your interviews.
I didn't write my own scripts.
And all that kind of stuff. But you saw and you were part of things being put together. And even, you know, in the makeup, in that makeup room, sort of Lindsay and Patricia teaching you how to do your makeup.
Yeah.
And so you had all these skills going along that it was like, all right, good, got that in my pocket. Move on, what's the next thing, sort of thing. So
I nearly didn't get the job because I didn't have a regional accent. That was the funny thing about it. They're like, nah, you haven't got a regional. I was like,
I can have one. I'll give you one. What do you want? Drummy?
Accents, I really wouldn't be able
but
to
But that
do.
Was, that was a, I mean, Christine Bohr, I mean, I owe her a lot because she, when she was launching MTV UK, that was what she wanted to do. She wanted to represent the UK. Mm-hmm. And what I love about her, not just for that side of things, was like how many women she brought in
Absolutely.
With accents.
And I was really interested because you chambermaided and all sorts of stuff back in the day.
100%.
That's what I love about that. You're not afraid of hard work, like grafting properly.
Well, I wanted to do it before I was allowed to do it.
Yeah.
Really.
We had to keep her in the kitchen because she couldn't go out front because she was too young.
So you're obviously such a really close family. How often do you get to spend time together? Like, how often are you going up to Fife and you coming down? Like, what's that?
I'm down maybe every couple of months.
Yeah, you're down
maybe
more than being able to come up.
Well, it's more difficult for you because you've to organise the boys and things like that, and you've got work. Well, your dad and I are full-time grandparents now.
Loving life.
Yeah, love it.
When Rudy was born, you've got a great fact. When Rudy was born, what was it? You saw him every month for...
How many years? Was his third birthday or
first 3 years of his life?
Oh. Every month.
Amazing. That's amazing.
To come to his first Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What incredible photos you must
he
have.
He was, what, 10 days old?
Yeah.
Bloody hell. Did you really go to...
After a C-section.
Edith was feeding between takes.
Oh my God.
Express.
Rock and roll, babe.
Express and milk.
Oh, but then hilarious. I look back and it's like... I remember the journey there was horrendous. Tom and I packed up the car for this tiny individual. He was playing, Tom was playing. I was doing telly and Mum was being our Mary Poppins. And we packed the car for this little thing and there was so much stuff in the car. And it was his first car journey and he pretty much screamed for the entire like 3.5 hour. Tom had to do a rehearsal and he literally had to just get to the hotel, throw me in the room and go to this rehearsal in Wells. And I was just, look on my face, I was just like, what have we done? And he just like looked at me and went, it's going to be all right. Don't worry.
Terrifying.
And then Mum turned up like 5 minutes later and I was like, I'm so glad you're here.
Mum, don't leave. Help.
Thank you.
There was everything in that car.
Oh my God.
Fridges. But you even did that as well later on when you just turned up at the house when you could tell from the tone of my
phone
voice.
Call.
She phoned me. Tom was away on tour and Rudy must have been months old and I was at the house on my own. And Mum phoned and she could just tell.
Edith has a great thing of saying, "I'm fine, Mum. I'm fine." And I know fine when she's no fine.
That's Eleanor, "I'm fine" Bowman talking.
So I said to her dad, I says, "Nah, Mrs. needing a wee hand.
She's not fine."
"Nah, she's not." So I went down.
Neither of us are good for asking for help though.
Nah.
You're not good for it either, would you say?
Oh, I didn't need help.
See?
Why do you think?
I think my dad kind of made me an organiser. You know, he would say, "I'm going to see if you can organise such and such a thing. If the Rotary were having a function, see if you can organise this and do this and whatever." And yeah, I've been...
You're the fixer.
Yeah, fixer, aye. Used to love doing weddings, organised weddings. Used to love meeting the couples beforehand.
I remember saying to you, like, before... I mean, I never thought Tom and I would get married because he never really wanted to get married.
He never asked you, did he?
And yeah, until
but didn't
that
you say
night,
something
yeah.
like, if you were together for 10 years, then you would get married?
Yeah.
And when he did propose after 10 years,
he was like, let's do it when we've been together for 10 years kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's not make a fuss about it. And then after we had Spike, like within months of us having Spike, so I don't know if he was going through some kind of, you know, hormonal new dad thing. He just in the middle of the night kind of was like, "I think we should get married." And I was like, "What?" And so that was kind of like, okay. But I'd said to Mum even before that, "Look, if I ever get married, I'm just telling you now, it's not going to be that big
frou-frou madness,
big wedding
yeah.
kind of thing."
Oh, look at your
mum's brother, Alec will have that. And he did. Yeah. And he had like the big kind of, you know, massive kind of 300 people at it.
Oh, that terrifies me. How many people were yours?
Well, there was
us lot.
Yeah, we got
there after in tea, didn't we?
Oh,
it was lovely with the mincemeat pies
and mulled wine and stuff.
Really nice.
It's about making it yours.
Yeah, totally. I want to say that you've got. I mean, I love your kids' names. They're so super cool.
They were Tom's choices, really.
And Rudy. Don't, I mean, they're super cool.
Rudy was. We had loads actually for the first one. Like I had lots of Scottish things like Wallace and things like that. But he had Rudy from a book that he was reading, and also this. Beautiful B-side from the Lemonheads called Rudy with a Flashlight. And one of the names that I had was Bray, which was a kind of, it was for my granddad, really, who I was really close to, because he lived on Brayhead Road and he used to walk the Brays. So the Brays in Scotland are, it's a term for a kind of coastal walk by the sea. And so I was like, should we call him Bray? And then, I don't know, he came out and it was like, Rudy Bray sounds nice. So.
Lovely.
So yeah, and then Spike was actually... So he's Spike Stanley. Rudy picked Stanley. And we had this book of Spike Milligan poems, kids' poetry that we used to read to Rudy. And it just felt... And when we went into the hospital, the midwife was like, "Does baby have a name yet?" Because we knew what we were having, because yeah. Rudy wanted to find out. Didn't really want to go with Stanley's his first name. And so Spike just kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And oh my God, does it suit him?
Super cute. Why is that? What describes Spike to
me?
Oh,
he's just... Oh, he's a devil. He really is. He just winds his brother up so much, but he's so cheeky. He's got that little glint in his eye, isn't he? Oh my goodness.
Who am I most like? Like when I was a kid?
You've got a bit of both of them, or they've got a bit of you in both of them.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm more to Spike.
was Edith, was she really mischievous and like cheeky?
I was like, someone said to me recently, "You're going to have another one, try for a girl." I was like, "Are you serious?" Oh, it was a nightmare.
Oh, she wasn't a nightmare. You just knew what you wanted to do, didn't you? What was it?
Like,
"According to Mummy, I'm going to be a proper little madam."
She used to quote things off
the
telly.
She used to quote on the telly. What was it Just William?
That sounds Bonnie Langford.
Bonnie Langford,
oh my
that's
God.
Right.
The most precocious of all.
Got caught drinking quite a lot.
Did you?
When I was a teenager.
Smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the bike shed.
What did you make me do?
Smoke a whole cigarette.
In front of her and my dad.
Until it was red raw at the bottom.
That's a quick, surefire way to get you to stop, right? Did you vomit?
I think I vomited, but I didn't stop smoking.
Did you not? Oh my God.
But the last cigarette I had actually was the night before I found out I was pregnant with Rudy.
Good timing.
yeah, I mean, I'd had quite a few and I'd had quite a lot of Jack Daniels that night. And I was like, but I haven't had a cigarette since. But yeah, bad girl at times.
Well, we've all been there.
Bored in a fishing village, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not enough to do.
I think, did you know early on that I was going to leave?
Oh, definitely.
Did you?
Definitely not enough for you to keep you at home.
It's quite sad that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. No, not really. It's
no,
not.
You just spread your wings and off you go.
That's right.
It's like, I didn't know that you had epilepsy as a child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A baby, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That must have been terrifying.
She was 11 months and she was sitting on my mum's knee and she just went all limp. And because my mum and dad stayed in a flat above the hotel and mum was going to be looking after you because we had a big function on that night. And I had just come up to see how you were and my dad says that bairn's no right, that bairn's no right. So he started to pat your back and I said, I'll try and phone the doctor. Couldn't get an answer, so I ran about 500 yards down the road to bang on this doctor's door. Meanwhile, she had come down the stairs on somebody's shoulder and they wondered whether it was that, and then one of the young waitresses had given her the kiss of life. But it was scary, scary.
So I was on medication for every day and then I got sort of, you know, touch wood, so I think got weaned off it.
Yeah.
Was it 8 when I had my last fit?
Yeah, I think so. 8 or 9, I would say.
Yeah. And then I had to get, I remember going for the brain scans because you'd go and get checked all the time and the smell of the, they'd have to sort of stick the
glue,
the things to your head, and the smell of the glue would make me sick. So you'd be sat with one of those, you know, those kind of weird paper mashy top hat things being sick into it. It's weird. I've got that really visual memory of that.
That's so scary.
Yeah.
And then it just stopped.
Yeah.
It just grew out of it.
Weaned off there. The medication.
And then you mentioned about the cesareans. You had 2 cesareans and that was recommended to you.
Yeah, and because so when I was at Radio 1 and I was fully kind of both feet into work, absolutely loving what I was doing and kind of, you know, party girl as well, having a great time. And so I went to the doctors just to say, you know, feeling a bit tired and stuff. So they detected that I had a heart murmur. But because of that, my consultant made the decision that, you know, the thing as a woman that puts your heart under the most strain is going through labour, or it could be. And so he said, what's the point of putting your heart under unnecessary strain when we can make a decision to not do that?
Yeah.
So he made the decision for me to have C-section. And yeah, and you know, it's weird though, because you kind of, you get these kind of like, oh,
really?
Sounds
from other women
sometimes kind of going, oh, you know, as if to say, oh, poor you, you didn't get to have natural birth. I'm like, well, actually not poor me, because both my kids and me are healthy
yes.
And we're fine. And that for me is in priority.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
there's all
that
thing
about, oh, you don't have that connection. It's like, oh, piss off. You know, I've got an amazing relationship with my kids and that was instant.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you about, because like you, my family's been touched by breast cancer, by cancer in general, like just on so many sides, both sides of my family, unfortunately, it's like a dark shadow. And I know that you're really passionate at campaigning and working with lots of different breast cancer charities.
Yeah, and cancer charities, because we've lost a lot of people, most of our family through it. And, you know, luckily mum got through breast cancer, caught it really early.
How many years ago was that?
That was 2006.
Was it?
Yeah. It was the year that we were giving up the hotel. And it was just such a shock. It was only through, you know, the breast screening. You're invited to go for a breast screening.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Something reminds me that you're 50. Yeah. And, it was just through that that it was detected. And it was really minute. But I had to have like 20... radiotherapy sessions.
It was brutal, wasn't it?
I got really burnt and whatever, but to me it was a small price to pay for your life, really.
And then what was the, because you had to go on,
was it tamoxifen?
Well, I didn't know what I was on,
because
I agreed to do a test.
Oh
yeah, they were doing a trial and they asked if I would take part in the trial, so I don't know what I had. So I did that for 5 years.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It was hard, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was okay at the beginning. I would say it was after it, I think, it kind of hit me. I kind of got a wee bit of depression, I would say, after it. I was quite downy.
Yeah. I think it's your go-to, it was your normal go-to thing. So whilst, when you found out you had it, your main concern was making sure everybody else was all right.
Aye.
And then it was only after you'd done the radiotherapy that I think it hit you for what you'd just been through.
Yeah.
And
it took a, and I think the best thing for me was chatting to people about it, because some people have, you know, they close up and they didn't like to talk about it. And I mean, I remember when I was growing up as a youngster, my uncle Tom, I mean, I could only been about 5 or 6, and he was diagnosed, and then they said it was the big C. They didn't say the word. And I remember, I couldn't understand what they were talking about. And it was just, they whispered it. It was the big C.
Yeah.
And it was never, the word cancer was never, so ever spoken taboo, about.
Wasn't it? It was
just, and I just think it's so important for people to be upfront talking about it, even like depression as well. When you are down and you don't see any lights at the end of the tunnel, it must be so hard for people, you know, that doesn't have anybody to speak to.
There's been quite a lot of few men in our village you know, killed themselves.
Oh no.
And it's you know, it's that thing, it's like, talk about know that you can talk about it, and there are people who are going to listen to you.
There's some amazing charities out there for men. I mean, like Calm is an amazing one. There's, because you're right, they just keep it to themselves, and they just don't feel that they can
open up about it.
It's a generational thing as well, though, in terms of what you're talking about, because I remember, so my dad's mum died giving birth to my aunt. My dad was 3. And I had this amazing relationship with my granddad, his dad, because I was the first granddaughter and they named me after her. And, you know, curious child, I'd ask him about her and he would tell me about her. And nobody was allowed to ask about her before. And so I remember my aunt kind of saying to me, oh, you know, I can't thank you enough because you've told me stuff about my mum that I was never allowed to. I never knew about her. I was never allowed to know, sort of thing. And it's kind of, it's that weird thing, isn't it? Where these doors are shut and you're not.
Yeah, you just lock it away and you don't mention it.
Yeah.
And actually, you need to talk about people that you
to
lose.
Hold
that
all that in.
You know, it's just so damaging, repressing all those feelings and all.
Well, we lost my niece. She had a very rare form of bone cancer, Susie.
She was 8.
My mum died of bowel cancer. My dad died of bowel cancer, and my eldest sister died of bowel cancer, and my sister's husband, Brian, he was only, what was Brian, 38. He had pancreatic cancer.
But I know what you're saying is, like, after you've been through something like you went through, and whilst you're going through the treatment and everything, you're keeping everything together. My cousin's just been through it, and it's now she's finished the chemo, finished the radiotherapy, that she's like,
look after her.
Yeah. But the realization of what she's just been through and what could have been, and all of that just hits you. And it's that aftercare that you really need to be aware of, because you just think, oh, you're right now, you're over it. And it's those lasting effects that just stay with you. How has it changed your relationship since the cancer diagnosis? Did it change it at all?
We've always been really close.
Because
Mum had me when she was 19. And I still remember being sat at my desk at Radio 1 when she phoned to tell me that she had breast cancer. So blasé the way she told us as well. And that it was really early and it was going to be fine and stuff. And she did immediately just kind of make sure everybody else was okay. And I think that, weirdly, having Rudy at the time that I had him was a good thing for you, because it was a distraction.
Yeah, definitely.
To having gone through all that and having something else to kind of focus on. But I kind of feel that we've almost get kind of closer as well, as the kind of, I mean, I can kind of talk to her about anything. Always have done.
Aye.
Always will do.
I can't talk today without going back and learning about your passion, where it came from, for music, because I believe that, Eleanor, you took Edith to her first ever concert.
Rod Stewart.
Rocking out to Rod Stewart. Yeah. How old were you then?
Well, our first one, she was in here. I was 8 months pregnant at Glasgow. Yeah.
Did you just carries on then?
Who's the Apollo?
The Apollo, which is no longer there. Mm. And then the next one, well, the first one you went to, was it Ibrox?
About 7?
Yeah. And we chased the bus.
Desperate to get an autograph. So we waited outside the hotel he was staying at to get an autograph. It's hilarious. And someone pushed me away, though, didn't they?
And then did somebody not take a hold of you?
It's only a kid.
That's right, she's only a kid.
Signed the programme.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, there was music around the home.
We always had music so playing. There was music in the house, the hotel.
Yeah. From like the band playing, they'd have street parties for things like royal weddings mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff.
Music in the kitchen.
Music always in the kitchen. Yeah. And then I was in a band from when I was like 15. I was never in like school bands.
No. But you never had enough time because you were working.
Yeah, well, that was it, yeah. But yeah, there was always music around.
Same with me.
So I think it was just...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And I guess, do you know what I think as well? It's like I saw what music did to people. Mm. So I saw like, you know, whether it be the Christmas carols mm-hmm. that we sung and how, you know, you saw people's faces light up or watching people dance.
Going to see
going to watch
Nancy
Mom.
Yeah, and exactly. Oliver.
So I think just it's that see it of being an observer yeah. of the power of music is, I think, the thing that made me want to get into that.
So a lot happened when you were 7 years old.
Yeah.
So your granddad had a stroke.
Yeah, my granddad, yeah, who was like my third parent, really. Yeah.
And, I mean, he survived, though, didn't he?
Quite, he did. He kind of defied all medical odds, science yeah. and odds. What did they say? They said 6 months to him?
Mm-hmm.
And he lasted, well, that's... That 60,
20, about 20 years, didn't
20
he?
20 years, yeah. So that was 15 years past Christmas Eve there that he passed away. And, yeah, I mean, I really felt for my brother because I'd had an amazing 7 years with him because he was, you know, mum and dad worked so much and the weekends were the busiest time. So I'd get dropped off at his on a Friday night. Dad would pick me up on a Sunday night. And in between that, he'd come along on a Saturday night with the Sporting Post and a Cornetto for us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had, and, but even before that, he was, he, you know, he,
we babysit. Never had to have babysitters really. Because your Auntie Hughesy and him were, yeah. he were
went,
amazing.
He went through two sets of tires on my Silver Cross pram.
Which we're still using to this day.
Still using it for my nieces.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's an investment.
Yeah. We had it out the other day there.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
But then also, so Alec was born when you were seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then Susie, your cousin, passed yeah. away. So all those three, like, yeah. huge, like, massive life-changing things happened. When she, did you notice that I have a change on Edith at all? At that, I mean...
I think you took it quite bad with Susie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were really... It really bothered you because I think she came to play with you one day and you didn't want to go out and play.
Yeah, and,
you felt so guilty about that,
years,
didn't you?
For years. Like, yeah. even like sort of 15 years ago.
Aye.
But I remember her strength of character was unbelievable. We were, my Aunt Evie got married and because there were so many of us, everybody was flower girls and stuff. And Susie had, so she kept breaking her arm. She broke her arm like 19 times. And so they then discovered that she had bone cancer. And so they amputated her arm, but they hadn't got it quick enough. And so she had this false arm for my Aunt Evie's wedding. She had this beautiful little cape that she wore over her dress. And I remember her going to you,
Aunt Eleanor, will you take off my arm? It's too heavy, I can't dance. And so she got her arm, girl. Took her arm off and she's up back up on the dance floor dancing away.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. She was an amazing little girl, wasn't
amazing,
she?
Amazing, yeah.
So clever.
Yeah.
So clever.
Yeah, and I kind of, I think that, I mean, I was always kind of older for my years. Mm. Because I was around older people all my life in the hotel and stuff. But that was... And I think that having my brother being born, and that was something that I'd craved for, was a sibling for a long time. Yeah. And Mum had gone through a few miscarriages, mm-hmm. if you don't mind me saying. And,
no.
And you know, when he came, it was just like, I was a bit, you know, I kind of looked after him
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Little mother.
So there was all these different things kind of thrown at you to kind of like to sort of deal with.
And you always think that these things happen for a reason, you know. Yeah. There's a newborn when somebody goes, there's something happens to take your mind off of things and
So how has being a parent changed your priorities?
Life's just a constant juggle, definitely. You really appreciate, I mean, I appreciate how much mum and dad did when I was growing up in terms of both having careers and kids and being able to juggle that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the relationship that grandparents have with their kids because I had an amazing one with my granddad. And I mean, all my grandparents, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember granddad.
Grandma and Granda Clark.
And grandparents are the best.
They're amazing.
They really
we used to go on road trips with them and granddad's Jag with Des O'Connor.
I wasn't used to the music.
I still remember that. You've got that holiday feeling. And there's old 8-track things in his car. and I just, I remember that really special. And Christmases. Mm-hmm. Of them making the effort
to, they used to come to over
be,
to the house
to be with you at Christmas to open your presents. Yeah. They would go around everybody. They'd have to have a rota. There were that many.
Santa used to come to us first. He used to just come after midnight.
Got these great cine films of them all.
Oh, that's Saturn nice. That's precious.
Really nice. One of the things I did with my granda Bowman, because he ended up living with us because he lived with his sister, Husie, and she died. And so he moved in with mum and dad. And as I sat him down and filmed him, so I sat him in the rocking chair, which I've now got in my house, and got him to talk about his earliest memory right up to present day.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So I've got it.
I think every family should do that.
I know, and I keep myself because so I wanted to do that for so long with my nana because she's just, she lived till she was nearly 95 and she had all, was
fabulous.
There's no secret remembrance. Remembered everything and I just didn't dig deep enough or get enough of that history.
It's an amazing thing to have.
Gosh, yeah.
I haven't been able to watch it yet.
That will take a while.
But I need to watch it because I've promised my dad I'm going to make a short film about him.
That would be lovely.
So, I know who's going to play him.
Who?
I'm not telling you because I haven't asked him yet.
Okay.
That's my plan. Maybe not this year. Well, I want to get it written this year.
Who's going to write it? Are you going to write
it? I'm
going to
write it.
Incredible.
That's on the top of my to-do list.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good girl.
My short film, Granddad.
That's beautiful. Mm. Edith, what's the best piece of advice you've ever had from your mum?
What's meant for you won't pass you by.
I
kind of use that weekly.
Do you?
Yeah, definitely. And it's that thing that helps me through those knockbacks.
Yeah.
It's kind of like things happen for a reason. Yeah. It's not meant for you.
And Eleanor, what have you learned from your daughter?
Slow gin is a really nice option.
Oh, I was waiting to say that just now. She introduced me to a new alcoholic drink that we had at Christmas time. Slow gin, made by our own fair hands, it was.
Was it really?
Yeah.
This is just a fabulous slow gin maker.
Well, she's a great cook. She really is. She introduces me to a lot of new dishes. And Japanese food she's introduced me to, which I love.
Love it.
But I would say gin.
Fabulous. Thank you. Next time, will you bring a bottle of said gin, please?
I shall bring you a bottle of Slow Bow Gin, as we've renamed it.
Slow Bow
Gin.
Thank you, ladies.
Thanks,
really
love.
Special.
Really
talking
nice to you.
Thank really
you.
Lovely.
Thanks,
to learn so much about your closeness and your gorgeous family.
Thanks, love.
Fabulous is Britain's most read women's magazine and is packed full of affordable fashion and beauty, as well as exclusive interviews with our most loved female celebrities. It's also free every week in the Sun on Sunday. Join me next time on Things I Told My Daughter, where I get to meet another amazing mother and daughter duo. I'm Lisa Snowden, and you've been listening to Things I Told My Daughter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.